Welcome back, everybody. It's been a couple weeks since we've been in the Flight Test Podcast studio. It's recording. We're recording. You were nervous weren't you?
Like, I didn't see
we are recording, and hopefully you can hear that awesome Flight Test music bringing us in here for another episode of FT After Hours. And with us in the studio, I have Wayne Griffith.
Hey, guys.
And again, our favorite Canadian. I don't know how we got him twice in a row. Yeah. But we got Andre Russo. How you doing?
I'm very well, guys.
Awesome.
Thank you for inviting me back.
We're missing Mike. Now, last I heard, he was on some crazy wild Caribbean cruise ship down there. I don't know where. So
he didn't take us with him.
Yeah, I know. I mean, what?
He's flying his quad off the upper deck.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
Into the water it goes.
So what's going on? What's new and exciting? Anything? Weather's still been pretty crappy around here. What's going on up north?
I got out to fly on Tuesday. I got out with my FT racer again. That plane is like my life. It keeps me going during the winter. Actually, we're losing snow quickly on the field, but it's choppy.
Yeah.
And the guys said a few of them came in to some belly landing, and they were bleeding off foam as they were skidding over the ice.
Ooh.
So I'm like, if we get out tomorrow, because it is our long weekend, I think I don't want to take the Sky Mule out because the snow is all choppy and everything, but I think maybe the Fun Club, because that'll land on a dime. And I don't know, but it's just like Tuesday. I just got out and blasted three batteries, and it's just like, oh, I feel so much more relaxed.
Yeah, you know, I've been, I'm not nervous, but it's like there's really been nothing going on the last couple of weeks, and the weather, like, we're starting to get into the warmer weather, but usually, you know, around here in the spring, it gets so windy around here, and you're just like, oh, we get a 50, 60 degree day, and it's blowing 30 miles an hour.
Or the best weather is during the week, and then we get the weekend, down again.
Right. So. Or, you know, Ohio, it'll be sunshine and like till 4 o'clock, and you get home, it'll be raining.
Yeah.
So,
unless we have something else going on, and then it's going to be sunny and 70 and no wind. So.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we're stuck indoors.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to bring this up because it's been a long, rough week, and I was at work today, and my phone was just bzz, 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 bzz,
bzz, bzz. Yeah, so was mine.
And unfortunately, I've just been too busy, and, you know, can't look really answer it. So later on this afternoon, I finally pulled it out of my pocket, and I think I was welcome to, like, 18 text messages or something. So got home a little early today and was browsing through them. So I kind of seen that there was some Radian talk, some Radian Pro talk. So what's going on here? What's this about?
It's funny. I was talking to the guys at the field because we were just discussing, and we were bantering back and forth about the field, and I mentioned that I was looking for a Radian, and two of the guys I know, good both of them great guys, came back. One said, I got a Radian, and another guy said, I got a Radian Pro. So then the conversation started, and I think the gist of it is I think the Radian and I are going to be becoming perfect, a used Radian.
Really?
I can't ask for it.
There you go. That's awesome.
You know, and right on budget, and even wife approved.
Really?
Nice.
Well, I had to work some overtime this week, so so rather than take the time, I'm taking the money and running.
So once again, I'm done till the P40 comes out.
Well, and on the P40,
another
delay. So I've been corresponding with Stuart on the RC group because we were discussing the battery thing, and I came back and we were just going on further. And then today they released that he mentioned that the little German thing,
the 163,
that comes out next. And basically he said the P40 won't come out for several months afterwards. So we're looking now late summer into fall. So I'm like, well, okay, it's a birthday gift here now, which is really unfortunate because, like, my Sukhoi is hung on my wall now since December because, you know, the conditions aren't just right to land that thing anywhere. So that's, pardon me, I was really hoping to get a Warbird for the summer. So.
Huh. Hang on, we're having a, just a little. Is that better? No, worse.
No,
that's me. That's me.
That's you.
That's me.
Yeah, we're working with our headphones. Mine's a little loud.
Hang on,
so.
Little technical difficulties here. So let me try.
Yeah, it's the one right next to it. That one.
Oh, it must be this number, one. Yeah. How's that? Better?
Yeah.
Musical?
Good. Magic. All right. We had to do a little adjustment there.
Yeah, my headphones were a little bit loud.
Yeah. All right. We're back. They brought out the 163. He said it was on the boat here a while back. So, you know, they're looking, what do you say, 6 to 8 weeks on the boat to get over here. And then, like you said,
and
after
they
that.
And custom issues.
Right.
You know, so it's unfortunate. I think I like what they're doing because they're saying we're not going to release a plane until one we're happy. Uh-huh. So maybe there's some issues going on there, but we don't know. But and they won't release it until it's in all the warehouses, because that's what's always the gripe with anybody buying. It's like,
right.
Oh, great, released it. We can't get our hands on it until it makes it over North America. For me, I buy international from the international warehouse anyhow, because I can't bring in stuff in from the U.S. because it's just crazy costly.
Yeah.
So to me, it didn't matter. But I'm like, oh, and I sat there and said, well, do I just give in and get like the Mustang or the Spitfire? And I'm like, I don't. You know, the Spitfire is cool and everything. I'm just like, oh, that P-40 looks so good.
Yeah.
So, and I can't even get, like, you know, FMS would be neat, but, like, getting parts and that is just a nightmare. You know, good old Canadian issues, I suppose. So I'm like, okay, I'll wait. But it's kind of like, oh. So I don't know. Maybe I'm going to send you on a mission when you guys go to your Toledo show next week.
Okay. Yeah, we'll look around for you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I if I can get a used Warbird, they'll hold me off all summer. Now, I wouldn't be able to get it till like July when we meet up at Flight Fest, but who cares?
There you go.
I got a question for you, and I don't even know if you can really answer, but what is like going on with Canada? It seems like you're very kind of restricted on certain RC products of what you can get and buy. And you're held to that unless, like you do, you know, you go right directly to Hobby King. Like there, you said, you know, you can't really get a hold of like FMS or some other stuff. Why is that?
I'm not 100% certain. I know the FMS guys. There's a couple dealers out of most of them seem to be out in the Western Prairies area that I found. I haven't found anybody in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you know, then I'm still dealing with shipping costs within Canada, which is crazy.
Oh,
and
it is.
Even more frightening, I was looking because I was comparing notes on the Radiant thing.
Uh-huh.
And I checked out what the retail price on the Sukhoi is now. And it has jumped from what I paid for it in September to now. It has jumped about $50-$60.
No kidding.
Yeah, like out of the box, after taxes in Ontario, I would be looking at about $334.
Ooh.
And the Night Vision Air?
Yeah.
Tack on $100.
Ooh. Oh, man.
$434 or $33 out the door for a Night Vision Air.
Wow.
Basic. So I'm just like... That's a really expensive plane.
Not wife approved, huh?
Yeah, not wife approved.
No, not even me approved. And you know, I'm a little bit of a nut job lately, but you know, this is supposed to be a fun hobby, you know, and it's, you know, and my poor wife looks at me and go, well, they're just airplanes. I'm like, no. This one does this. You guys know what I'm talking about. But
so
I just like. Wow.
It really makes your plane decision a lot more difficult than I would take it. You know, if you're choosing this or that, and you're like, got to really weigh the options on everything.
Oh, yeah. And you know me. And then we, like, last time we were on the last podcast, we discussed the battery thing. And yeah. I sat there forever. And I do have my new batteries. And I'm looking forward to slapping them into some airplanes and going. But again, you know, that was a very expensive purchase and a very, you know, okay, let's be very rudimentary about what we're looking at, because all of a sudden my costs due to the exchange rate are just growing and growing and growing. So
right. Huh, interesting. All right, hey, back to the Radian Pro there. So two guys have, like, one has a Radian, the other guy has a Pro. Is that?
Yeah.
So you talked to both of them about flying them and how they liked them and everything, I take it?
I just asked. Well, I was just talking on the group, and I got two individual emails back saying, "Hey, I got one. I've got the three channel used. Another guy said I got a pro used, and you know, the prices are all right." But I looked at, you know, the first time I flew the Radiant was courtesy of you last year at Flight Fest, and I just loved flying that plane. I mean, we must have hung around for a good 20-30 minutes just cruising above, and you know, everybody's scattering around, you know, low to the deck with their foamies and everything, and we're way up above soaring with the eagle, and Wayne got those beautiful shots of you and I.
Yeah,
and that had been my first experience, and I came home, and my dad and I stripped all the FPV gear out of my Bixler, and I said, "Here, put some tape on your wingtips on the bottom and watch what we'll do." And we went from, like, you know, 8 minutes of cruising around to 16 to 20 minutes just kind of bopping around and running the throttle up. So that plane had been big on my list.
Right.
But the difference between the two for me and, you know, loading it in my car and the simplicity, it's Radiant. It's the Radiant hands down over the Pro. I looked at it and, okay, I see what they're doing with the flaps and everything. And actually, I watched the flight test video from 2012 with the Josh and Josh show.
Right.
And they went through the two planes and, you know, and Josh was explaining, you know, well, okay, you get all these flaps and you can do all the crow and all this stuff. And it really change how the plane flies. But for me, I'm like, well, I just... you know, I'm not doing any of that. I know what I want to do with this plane. I want to be able to, you know, this summer when I'm with you guys, we're going to be able to throw them up in the air. We're just going to cruise around and chat, you know?
Right.
And one of the things we've talked about is, you know, that plane that you flew at Flight Fest, the Radiant Pro is not even the same. It should have never been called a Radiant Pro. It is not a Radiant. It is not even close. It's a real, in all reality, it's a totally different ship.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you really liked flying that Radiant, that's where you would really want to go, because I think you would really be disappointed if you got the Pro, because if you have that expectation. Now, there's guys who get the Radiant Pro.
They love
it. And it is what it is, and that's what they want. Yeah. But if you're looking because you've flown the Radiant, no, you're not going to like it.
The only thing I could – again, it's not a bad flying airplane. It doesn't have any bad tendencies. And it probably, you know, a lot of guys, seems like out west too, they seem to really like it, where they have, you know, the more bigger thermals. But for where we fly, and probably you, Andre, where again, like you said, the wings, you can just pull them right out. You know, you don't have to put the
ailerons.
Yeah, right. Which again, kind of was a pain in the butt for me too. Wayne would be already flying for 20 minutes while I'm still putting my wings in. And we flew them back to back to back to back. And honestly, 99% of the time, the regular Radiant just outperformed the Radiant Pro. But I'm on record to say I am no professional. It could be me flying. I don't know. But for simplicity, though, the regular Radiant just works so much better.
Yeah, because, you know, and whenever you want to just kick back, lay down, and just watch this thing soar over your head – if you want that kind of relaxing flying, oh, dude, go all out, because that's what we can do. We can go out and kick back on a recliner.
Which we've
and
done. Sit there
and, oh, yeah. Yes. And get this thing up in the air and just have a nice, peaceful, nice flight.
Yeah. You know? And honestly, there was times we had the lawn chairs out, our iced tea out, went up about 400, 500 feet, put a couple clicks of right, you know, turn in it. Lay the radio on your lap, man, and look for thermals. I mean, the thing, you know, and that was the one thing I liked about the regular Radiant is, you know, it self-writes. It gets bumped around a little bit. It just writes itself back up. Where with the Pro, it definitely penetrated better than the regular Radiant. It was definitely faster, and you could move it around a little more. And it had all the bells and whistles, and sometimes it was fun to use them. But you had to fly that plane. Like, if it got bumped around – and it was in a 10-degree bank, that's where it stayed. Mm-hmm. You really had to keep, you know, on your toes to fly it, where the Radiant, maybe it's because I'm, you know, you could just be lazy with it.
Right, yeah.
So.
And that's exactly what I want. Now I don't have to take my Bixler apart to go up and just, you know, cruise around. And it's one of those, it's exactly that. Having just that other profile of an airplane for that day when I'm like, this is what I want to do. There's days where I'm going to want to fly fly my EFX racer to max power and everything, and then there's days where I just want to cruise, and you know, so it's nice variety, and you know, a used airplane for, you know, basically half of what it retailed originally, I'm all over that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, no doubt. Awesome.
See, and that's why we have so many different planes. We got the Radians if we just want that lazy evening, get up there, throw it up there, and find some thermals. And then you have your other ones that are, you know, your Warbirds and everything else where you can kick it up a notch and just fly like crazy.
Oh, yeah. There's just days where you're worn out. You know you want to go flying, but you know you're not on your toes enough to take care of some of those crazier or more, you know, more attentive aircraft, so...
I'm still waiting for that Whippet to come out because, man, yes. I want to throw that. That one I'm going to keep in my truck at
yes,
all times.
All
that
time.
One will always be where I can just pull off and just go.
I agree.
Yeah. I haven't tried DLG yet. I don't know if I'm coordinated enough to spin myself around and launch and control the airplane at the same time.
A little bit of practice. It really isn't that bad because the plane kind of, when you throw it, it kind of straightens out itself and gets up there and you just push it over a little bit and you're good to go.
I could just see myself shooting it into the opposite track.
Yeah, that happens every now and then.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, you get that high throw and it goes inverted. We've been there a few times.
Whoa, where's it going?
Yeah. Yeah, you're on your toes a little bit.
Oh, yeah, we've had a few of those old crap moments. That like, uh-oh.
Yeah. All right, anything else? Or other than that, we'll dive into some other stuff.
Well, other than... those batteries showed up, as I mentioned. So in the end, and Chris alluded to this one last time on the last podcast, I was driving you crazy. Just ask questions. Anyhow, I've gone with the A-Spec 3S 2200, and those are like 60-65 C batteries. So those are the ones they spec out for the EFX racer. Mm-hmm. And you know, we'd really discussed the 4S and everything, and I decided, you know what, the 3S in a lot of my bigger draw planes is just going to be a beautiful thing, because I've been flying now for the last 2 years almost now with my little Zippy Compact 25Cs, and you know what, in my FT racer, they are perfect. I mean, I'll fly that plane at like 80% to 100% throttle the entire 7.5 minutes, and the battery's just coming out just a tiny bit warm, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but in something like the T28, which has got a big motor, these new batteries are going to be kind of fun, and they'll work in the Warbird, they'll work in the EFX racer, so I can get my hands around the 4S before I go into the 4S again. So
right.
So,
all right. Well, this is what we're going to do. I have been just overwhelmed with the crash stories that we've been getting lately. I mean, I got a ton of them.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I think there's like a couple with double stories buried in there. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good haul.
And they're great stories. And two, there really hasn't been a whole lot going on here lately the last couple weeks. Weather's crappy, no new products. But I will let you know, we got a lot of stuff coming up. We got some reviews coming up. We got the Toledo show that we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
I have my hands, Andre, on the Night Vision Air.
So, I was bugging Alex about that one.
he stopped me here a little bit. He goes, Andre, talk to you. I say, yeah, we're getting it. So we're going to do some testing with that and probably with the Park Zone Zukoi and do a little, you know, back-to-back comparison. So we got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm excited.
Oh,
I'm really excited.
No doubt.
It's going to be good. But if you guys like the crash stories in the rest of this podcast, you're going to really enjoy, I think, because we got some good ones and we're going to just talk about them, break them down a little bit. And some of them are good, funny, sad, all kinds of stuff in here. And I just want to get through some of these and because next couple of weeks we're pretty busy. We may not get to too many of them. So we're just going to roll right through these.
And I think one of the things to take away from these crash stories, especially for you guys who are out there who are new to this, is you'll find out. Crashing is inevitable. You will crash.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things. Nobody likes it, but you just pick up and keep going.
Yeah.
Don't give up. It's, I mean, there's some of it. It's heartbreaking, man.
I know.
And then, I always laugh at these ones where, there's always a bunch of people around. Ooh,
yeah.
You're like, oh, man, the walk of shame, But it is what it is, you know. Just pick it up and keep on going. And
you know what really makes me laugh, though, is every time I read one, I go, oh, yeah, I did that. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that happened to me.
Or you know the rest of the story,
yeah, exactly.
And you're only halfway through it. You're like, you read my mail.
Exactly. So I don't know if that's good or bad. But.
And they all have that one common theme. One more time around.
Exactly.
It's always that one more time.
Right. All right, I'll try to roll through these as quick as I can. Hopefully I can All right, here we go. First one here is by Paul. And the funny thing was when I first read it, it made me laugh. But it says, have you hugged your plane today?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Got a couple very short stories, some of my flying. I've been flying now for about 2 years, summer only, so my flying is limited. I fly in small fields in the Stony Creek, Ontario area. Andre? Or should I say crash? My first real disaster was just finishing up the baby blender. I had everything ready to go. It was on my workbench, which was the kids' pool table. I was just checking the servo directions, etc. I have an old JR 75 megahertz radio with a computer control, so I was going through the system. But being new to this radio, I had to get used to how it did things. So I'm going through the individual controls and I came up to the throttle. It had a reverse and forward option. So I thought, well, this will change the direction of the motor. The motor is running fine, so I will leave it. Let's go to the next item. All of a sudden, the baby blender took off full speed into the wall, bent the shaft, broke the prop, and destroyed the nose.
Mm.
I actually reversed the throttle, so the up stick was off and the down was at full as I was trying to go to the next screen. Oops. Needless to say, the new blender was built, and it flew well outside. So that was the first story, and how many times I've been there and learned pretty Done quick, it. Pull the prop off. Mm-hmm. If I'm doing any kind of serious radio programming, where I got to check something on the plane while it's live, that prop is coming off.
Mm-hmm.
One of my older stories, you probably know about, Andre, I've talked about before, is I had the Radiant on the table, and I think it was the Corsair. I was doing something, and it fired up, took across the table, and cut my Radiant in half.
Yes, it's not one. Yep.
No. Okay, he's got another one here. He says, my next adventure was with my Avro Aero Scratch Built. He says, Andre, you might appreciate this plane.
I do.
This was my second Scratch Built after my success with the Delfer, see articles. Okay. My maiden flight was very interesting. It took off, no problem. Nice straight. However, it spun like a dart straight into a 60-foot tree and stayed there. After several minutes of staring at it and thinking all my electronics were up there, how am I going to get this thing out of here? I went home, got the fishing gear out, and I returned. Spent a good hour trying to move the branches, but it was jammed in there pretty good. What do I do next? Ah, long pole should do the trick. I went to Home Depot, bought 4 25-foot electrical conduit. Did you know after a certain amount of feet of plastic pipe, it will bend while holding it vertical and you have little control of it?
Mm.
Well, after several more hours of trying, I decided that's it. She's gone. I took the pipe back, got my money back for the pipe anyway. A few days later, we had an extreme storm, so on my way home from work, I decided to drop by the crash site to see how it was going. Oh, my goodness. It was gone. To my surprise and joy, there it was on the ground 100 feet away. So here I am, soaking wet from the rain in the middle of the forest, hugging a drenched DTF Avro Aero. And that's so true. Yeah. That was, I think, one of the first things I did was went to Home Depot and bought 4 or 5 10-foot sticks of that pipe, put it together, threw it up in the air, and it bent right to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, so funny. So, Paul, that was a pretty funny story there. All right, next one. This is from A.J. Gall, and A.J.'s he sent in quite a few stories. It's A.J. From KC again. I thought I'd tell you about my crash story this week. I've been loving the aerial photography episodes with Eric Monroe and ended up getting an old demo Blade 350QX from my local hobby shop. I love it. I've been flying and filming with my Mobius. I also have been watching a lot of Sharpu videos lately, and I think those videos finally got to me. I was flying my 350 in a small field surrounded by trees when I randomly decided to see how fast it would in a quick burst. Well, it turns out it will go really fast. Yeah. I felt just like Sharpu for a second until I tried in vain to slow down before hitting a tree at the edge of the field. My wife said it best when she described the crash as an explosion of plastic motors and propellers. I love that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I do have to say that the quad held up really well. I put a new body in one of the motors, had its copper wires ripped out from the sticky bullet connector. After replacing the body, tightening the 37 screws that hold the body together, I'm flying the quad again.
All right.
AJ.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's one thing that always amazes me, even with the foam planes, is like, if you have a hard hit, it sounds like an explosion.
Oh, man, yeah.
You wouldn't think foam would be that loud, but it's like this, just this massive crack and just explosion kind of.
And who doesn't get that urge to just punch it once in a while just to see what's going to do, you know?
Exactly.
Then you find out.
All right. This one's from David West. And again, David West has really sent in some really good stories. I like to listen to them. Hi, Chris. Another crash story from the Two Dusters, One Fence post guy. If you remember that, that was a great crash story. My son tried his first scratch built using the FT3D plans. The plane turned out great. On the maiden, we were at our normal field, and the 3D was having a little trouble getting off the ground, so I offered a hand launch. We hand launch it and immediately rolls left, noses into the ground. Cam's looking at me like I did something wrong. And I'm looking at him wondering, like, what did you do?
Yeah.
The 3D was in need of repair, so we flew some other stuff, in which one was my new Kunai, and it flew great, which we've flown. That is an awesome airplane. After the 3D was repaired, we went out to fly at a different field and met a sheriff deputy in the parking lot runway. She was interested in the plane, so Cam once again hand launches a 3D, and again, it rolls left and into the ground. Ouch. So much for the air show. I explained to the deputy that we may need to try again at another time after repairs. So now Cam says he thinks the ailerons were reversed. We check, and sure enough, they are reversed. We both could swear that we checked it, and there it is. With ailerons adjusted, the new motor, bent shaft and all, this is a favorite to fly now. I've done that. I can't tell you how many times.
Yeah.
And in looking, like, the plane's sitting there, and I look, oh, yeah, it's good.
Wiggle,
and,
wiggle.
Yeah. Took off, and they're reversed.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you're such an idiot.
Oh, yeah, I've getting that big one. Hurry.
I have two. I got it in the air and realized they were reversed. And it saved a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is funny. All right. He continues on. A few weeks later, I got a new DX8 to upgrade from my DX6i. I set up my planes in the DX8. When we got a chance to fly, I took the Kunai out with a couple other planes. I forgot what I flew first, but I get to the Kunai. Pre-flight, I wiggle it just like we were talking about. I wiggle all the control surface, test the flaperon settings. All seems great. At launch, it starts to roll a little left. You know where this is going. I realize I can't stop, and I cut the power. As I do the walk of shame, it goes through my head that the ailerons were reversed. Test, and yep, they are reversed. I know I checked, but I remember I was looking head-on, and I usually check the control surface from behind the plane. I was also surprised how much damage I did at what seemed like a slow speed in the tall grass. But after cleaning and adjusting the prop and the motor, gluing the wing back together, and correcting the ailerons, it once again flies great. We are quite a pair of pilots. Now I check every flight with the memory of these crashes. And, you know, that's what it usually takes. Yeah. You know, you do it three or four times. You're like, okay, I've finally learned my lesson.
Yeah.
I did that to my big cargo plane. After we had the big tank where the wing folded, and so I rebuilt it all. I'm ready to go. And my buddy throws it, and it just noses in, bang, to the ground. You know what was reversed, right?
The elevator.
Yep. What a sound.
No.
What a sound. And then, you know, I spent the entire night working on this thing. Oh, I'm going to fly, Whack.
Yes. And you get so mad at yourself. Yeah. You're like, why did I do that?
Yeah.
So I started writing on the, because, you know, I was still a rookie. So I wrote on all the control surfaces. Okay. Right wing, that's up. Left wing, that's up. Okay, tail, because it was, and because you just look at the orientation, the guys are like, it's so simple. How did you not, you know? I'm like, I don't know, you know. And so I'm just a rookie. I'm allowed to make a few mistakes.
Right. All right, moving on here. I got another one here from Steve from Wichita, Kansas. Now, this one's a little long, but it's a good story. And the cool thing is he sent in some pictures with it. So if I can get them on there when I post the podcast, I'll try to post the pictures up. But this is funny. So I'm fairly new to RC Flight World. I've been introduced to it years back and been loosely interested until recently I finally made the plunge and bought my first plane. Here's my crash story. So last week I got my Hobby Zone Sport Cub S in the mail. I made quite a few successful flights with minor crashes in the first few days I had it. Over the weekend I made the trip down to Oklahoma City to visit my fiance, and of course I brought my new plane with me. Sunday afternoon rolls around with the fantastic weather. I figured I'd get a quick flight in around her neighborhood. I thought I could keep the plane in control near the house where there are many trees. First mistake.
Yeah.
Then, as I was about a minute into my flight, the wind picked up. As you all know, the Sport Cub is a super successful to any wind influence. So my plane got caught in a light gust, and I lost sight of it. I immediately cut the power, ran in the direction of the plane, hoping to find it on the ground. I did not. It was about 25 to 30 feet up in the tree. At first, I tried to use sticks and random things on the ground to throw at it and knock it down. I then moved on to the tennis ball. Then I got... Oh, when that got stuck, my fiance gave me an old pair of her flip-flops to try to hit it to the ground. Then the flip-flops got stuck. I was frustrated and close to giving up. I took out a normal-sized ladder to see if I could get to the nearest hanging limb and climb up the tree. I could, but the limb was clearly not strong enough to hold me. I then called my fiance's brother. He helped me get into the hobby as well as a flight test to see if he had a taller ladder or if he could help. He said, how long of a stick do we need? Ah, light bulb went off in my head. I ran to the future in-law's garage and found a fishing pole without a reel or a line on it, a broomstick, and an extending mop handle. I then taped them all together with masking tape and hoped it would be long enough. It was, and I was able to get my plane out of the tree. Meanwhile, the whole time my fiance was recording the whole thing.
I like her already, man.
Not only was she recording it, taking pictures and posting them.
Awesome.
I have the pictures from Snapchat attached, and they will give you a pretty good visual to the story being told. Needless to say, I learned a technique to get my planes unstuck. I still enjoy the hobby, and I have a bunch of stuff on order from FT, Altitude Hobbies, Amazon, etc. This is a great avenue for me and continue to pursue my love for aviation. If you'd like to post some of the pictures on the podcast page, that's cool with me, which, Steve, I think we might do because they're rather entertaining.
Dude, there's no room in that front yard to fly.
I know. When I looked at that, I thought, I don't think I would fly there. But, you know, it's the same old thing. You get a little confidence, and you're like, I can do this.
And that's what he talked about, that very first sentence. He had a few successful flights, and you know what happens. Oh, I can do this.
Yep.
I love the last photo.
Oh, yeah.
The last.
Oh, yeah. There's the flip flop. There's the ball.
And then the one before where he has everything taped together. I'm oh, my gosh.
Hey, it works.
It works.
The ingenuity of the people when you got to get your plane back.
Yeah. Great story, Steve. Yeah. That was good.
That was cool.
All right. Another long one. Ooh, this one's really long, but it's good. And I can attest to this problem. Okay, here we go. Benjamin. Hey, guys. So finally had a chance to sit down and write a story. Hopefully it makes a podcast. I am more willing to either get on Skype or call me if you want to talk about it. So, a week and a half ago, the weather finally broke here in northern Illinois, and we had a decent warm day. I had bought a Park Zone Sukhoi last fall, right before the real winter weather set in. Hey, Andre, you could probably relate to that. And it forced me to put it away. I had maybe two flights on it. All winter long, when working in the garage, I would see it sitting there and would contemplate just going for it until I would step outside in the single-digit temperatures. With 20 to 30 mile an hour winds and sub-zero wind chills. You guys in Ohio know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, reality would slap me in the face and I'd go back inside. So fast forward mid-March and we have a 50-degree day, sunny, 10 mile an hour winds or less, and I figured, here's my chance. I'm a lieutenant firefighter paramedic at our local volunteer fire department and live right across the street from our new station, which has a large and small parking lot as well as a huge concrete pad in front of the bays. So needless to say, I have my own personal runway of sorts. I take the Sukhoi out, burn a few batteries through it, and get the small audience of some of our firefighters that were there at the station out front watching me fly. Our chief shows up. He used to own and fly a Cessna, so he's always fascinated watching me fly RC. He watches for a while and asks me to start doing low passes. Ah, ha, ha.
Mm-hmm.
I figure, okay, time to impress.
Yeah.
So I start to bring it lower and lower with every pass, and what's going to be my last pass, again, here we go, last pass, before bringing it in, I decided to go low and inverted. Not actually a problem. The problem was, The problem was, as I passed myself standing in front of the main entrance, one of our new kids decides to pull our engine out onto the pad for checks. It flashed through my mind, I'm going to hit a fire truck with a plane. How do you explain that one?
Oh.
Well, being inverted and about 4 feet off the ground, I did what I thought was smart. I hit the safe button to roll me level, firewalled it, and pulled for everything the DX7 was worth. Well, suffice to say, it didn't work. Almost, but not quite enough. As I climbed over the engine, the wheels caught the ladder and ripped them completely out of the body, causing the nose to pitch forward. Caught one of the hose bed dividers right behind the cockpit on the belly and broke it almost completely in half, kicking off the canopy, which went through the prop. I was mortified. There was a collective silence with eyes passing back and forth to me and to the chief. About 30 seconds goes by, and he looks at me, starts laughing, and says, "You missed it by that much." We all started laughing. Believe it or not, there was no damage to the fire engine. He felt so bad about it happening that he actually wrote me a check, and I got a new Sukhoi ordered and on its way. So, while you, Mike, Wayne, and the guy seem to have problems with trees, mine is of the motorized variety. Attached are the photos of the damage. Going to put this one, going to gut this one and put the electronics into something. I don't know what yet. And by the way, the new kid who pulled the engine out of the bay is called his new nickname is Crash.
Crash, yeah. Love That's a nice place he's got to fly, yeah, too, man.
It
That's
is. Pretty good. He says, "Love what you guys do. Tell Mike to keep laughing because it makes me laugh and smile so much when I hear him get going. Picture of our station has the arrow of the bay of where the engine pulled out." You know,
I'm looking at the carnage.
Yeah, but you know what? You know, after I actually looked at the carnage, that plane really is not that bad.
No, it's fixable.
And I emailed him back and I said, "You know what? I think I would fix it, you know, and keep flying it." And the damage I did when I crashed was way worse than that.
Yeah.
So, but that's funny. That's a great story. And again, it's always, you know, you have them people around.
And that one more time.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yes. All right. Here's another one. This one's from Anthony. "Many thanks to FT and the After Hours podcast. I absolutely love a couple of you guys sitting around with the chatting atmosphere. After spending half of the day on a ladder decorating the front of my house for Christmas, I decided to take my Micro Radian for a flight around the backyard. I fly a whole battery around my small backyard and keep catching a rising wind current off my roof, really having a blast as usual with the Radian. Well, one time I came in a little funky, caught the wind different, and sent the UMX Radian soaring up over the roof completely out of sight. I spent several minutes running around the house looking for it and finally spot it on the roof intact." Ooh, we got lucky with that.
Oh, yeah.
"The ladders come out, climb up on the sunroom, drag up the smaller ladder, climb up on the main roof, grab the Radian, and without thinking, I chuck it off the roof. Back down to the backyard." This is funny.
Yeah.
"So I chuck it off the roof, no transmitter, without unhooking the battery. So you know the AS3X is going to keep that sucker going. Well, the Radian clears the edge of the roof, catches the same updraft I've been toying with earlier, and boom, it's 30 feet over my head with no one at the controls." I love it. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
"In my haste to get down, I knock over the smaller ladder, so I'm stuck on the main roof watching no less than 5 minutes as my UMX Radian cruised through three people's yard, almost hit my house, and the next one to it. Then took off for the woods. Luckily, it hit a little breeze at the tree line and sailed gently back to my yard for a smooth touchdown." Could you imagine the panic of you standing on the
roof?
You're
stuck on a roof. You see your transmitter.
Yeah, and this thing's just going.
Yeah, but it gets better.
Okay.
The ending here. Yeah.
All right. "This is long-winded already, so I won't bore you with the rest of it, but this is what I will say. After 15 minutes of coaxing my wife up on the roof to save me," she's afraid of heights, "I basically had to jump from the sunroof to catch her before she would have broken my micro into bits. In the future, I will unplug my battery before free-flying anything with AS3X."
Dude, you owe your wife big time.
Now, that is a story I think I've never heard of anybody you know, putting the transmitter down and like, oh, I'll just throw it off the roof.
Yeah.
And just chucking it going, what did I just do?
I wonder how long he contemplated about jumping.
You know, that's a good question. Like, should I just jump?
Yeah.
You know? Oh, my gosh, that's funny.
That was great.
All right.
I tell you, we got the best fans out there.
I'm telling
you. They're just the best.
I could sit and read these stories. Like, sometimes I lay in bed and I read them and I just laugh. I'm always what are you doing?
I go,
another crash story.
Yeah, my wife is always wondering what I'm laughing about. And then I have to read them to her. She gets a kick out of them.
It is funny. Let's see. Okay, this is another one from Jacob. And this is a crash story about patience. Hi, Chris. On my daily way to work, I listen to your podcast, and one of my favorite things are the crash stories. Now it's time to finally submit one of mine. Ooh, he's from Germany. This winter, here in Germany, the weather was not really nice for flying. As usual, it's the building season. So we decided to spend our winter holiday more than 4,000 kilometers further south and take my recently built aerial photography quadcopter with us. I was a bit worried about the motors, though. I have overloaded them a bit and did plan to change them in the future. In the cold winter in Germany, they were getting warm, and my worries were that they could melt in the south. And besides that, I never liked the idea of over-torquing them by more than 70% of the manufacturing limit anyway. I bought the new lower kV motors and bigger props. Of course, I forgot to order the fitting adapters for my motor shafts. The holiday date came dangerously close to my quad, and it was still grounded. In a hurry, I found some adapters lying around which should do the job, but the weather got worse, and the only place I could test a new setup was indoors. Without the GPS plugged in before our holiday, it flew bad. But the voice in my head, the voice in my head said, it has to fly, and it kept yelling at me. So I blamed the self-induced air turbulence of the 2 kg 500 millimeter quad with 12-inch blades in my living room for the reason. Why it flew so bad, and did not investigate it any further. Packed my bags, decided to fine-tune the gains in the warmer weather 4,000 kilometers away. Everything went fine. My quad came through all the security checks as well as the baggage handling unscratched. I was eager to finally fly in a desert between the cliffs and the mountains. To FPV all day, 2 weeks, until my eyes started to bleed. But first things first. I charged my batteries, tightened the prop screws, and took the quad a few steps out into the sand outside of our apartment to finally get the gains and do a quick line-of-sight test flight. Calibrated the compass, waited for the GPS lock, and took off. Again, it flew bad. It oscillated all around the place, made it hard for me to keep position and altitude. Okay, must be the gains after changing the props and motors. Remember, it has to fly. I tried different gains, no result. Switched from attitude hold to full manual mode since I thought the DJI NASA might be glitching because of a steel septic tank buried underground. Now he's really searching for answers.
Yeah, yeah.
What made things worse, quad seemed to act very, very delayed to all inputs, and it started to develop a mind of its own. Okay, I thought. It gained self-awareness. And this time, Judgment Day had to be prevented. Skynet will not take control of my quad. I have cut the throttles, better a barely controlled crash into the soft sand than looking for a possessed NASA quadcopter in place I am not familiar with. All right. Well, it went down. Before impact, I found a single huge rock smashed against it and then cartwheeled into the sand, breaking the frame, the gimbal, ripping out the cable from the GPS, smashing one motor, and covering the whole remains with a thick layer of fine sand. One day on our two-week trip, 4,000 kilometers from home, without any way to fix the damage. Oh. After the walk of shame, I just thought, well, I guess I'll be building a new tricopter next. It was a fun holiday anyway, but in every canyon and cliff while we were hiking, I thought, man, I so wish I had my quadcopter here. So, what was the reason? I found out that I did tighten the prop screws firmly, but against the adapter bushings, not the props themselves. Under load, the props were spinning around under the adapter bushings, which were a tiny, tiny bit too high. Just enough to not make it crash or spin, but enough to make it fly like it was possessed. In the end, my impatience brought the quad down, and the remains of the frame are on the wall to remember me to always check my stuff and never be impatient while flying.
The electronics are flying again. Several parts of them are on the tricopter. Thank you for all your entertainment on my trips to work. I have a nice, warm, and calm flying season for all of you. Jacob. You know.
Wow.
Something as simple as that. And
yeah.
It's, but that's an easy thing to miss.
Exactly. I mean, it's just... and again, how many times where you're pawing over something or like, what is wrong with it? What's going on? And it's always that simple little thing. You know, I've had that happen to a couple airplanes. Same thing. I swapped out motors, put a bigger motor on. You had to change, you know, the prop and everything, and the adapters weren't just right. And you're like, ah, it'll be fine. You crank it down. Same thing. I had a prop that was, you know, I chucked it, and it took off. Well, then it had no power.
Mm-hmm.
Crashed it. Right. Couldn't figure out what was wrong. Went through all the electronics. Fixed it all up. Went out. The same thing again. Finally realized that the prop adapter wasn't tightening down all the way.
Mm-hmm. Just enough. Just, it's tight,
yeah,
but not tight enough. And then it just starts losing.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing was, like, if you just ease the throttle up a little bit, it would stay tight enough to where it got off the ground. Then if you tried firewall on or you brought it back to idle, and then nope.
Yep. Once it breaks loose, you're done.
Yeah, and I mean, so funny. That was a great story, though.
Oh, man.
You know... I know I've told this story, but I'll throw it out there again because it is kind of funny. But was a couple years ago we went to vacation down in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, I loaded up the car. I had the Radian with me. I forget all what I took down there. So halfway there, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning, we had to stop, get gas. Everybody had to go to the bathroom. My wife needed something out of the back. It was buried. I'm pulling stuff out of the car. Pulled the Radian out there, you know, got all our stuff, threw everything back in there, driving down. And for some reason it hit me about 2-3 hours later. I go, I put the
carbon spar.
The carbon spar. Mm-hmm. I set it on the roof and I don't remember putting it back in the car.
It's like, so, why does your brain tell you now instead of when you're doing it?
Instantly, man, I'm off the side of the highway. I think my wife was sleeping. Out of the car I go. I'm tearing stuff apart. She's like, what are you doing? She wakes up. What's going on? I go, I left my carbon spar on the roof. She's like, what are you talking about? I go, my spar for my wings. I left it on the roof.
Yep.
Oh, he's lost so it. Mad.
Yeah.
So I think I spent a whole day once we got down there and settled in. I spent the whole day on the internet looking for a hardware store. Found a wooden dowel rod that, you know, wrapped a little tape around it, shoved it in there, and I got it to work for the week. So that was my weird story.
Yeah, I remember when you texted me about that. It's like, oh, man.
Yeah, I texted Wayne as soon as I got down there. You'll never believe what I did. and how many times, too, I think even when we go out and fly, that stupid carbon rod, I forget it at home.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. Thing.
All right, I got one here from Joshua Orchard. And I don't know if you remember, Wayne, we met Joshua last year at Flight Fest. He had a couple incredible planes that he built out of foam that were really detailed, and he's a really, really good builder. Great guy to talk to him, and I'm excited he's coming this year. I think he had that L4 Grasshopper that he had there. Guy does some phenomenal work.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. It's Joshua. I got a crash story I thought I'd share with you guys. I got back into the hobby a few years back after transitioning from models to girls in grade school. I'm a builder at heart and take on interesting projects that are unusual in historical significance. I fell in love with a Swedish 01, I don't even know how to say this, Tumesala. It's a post-World War I era biplane trainer. It has elliptical wingtips and unusual feature that I have not come across in any other biplane. The lines on this plane were pretty at any angle, and the aircraft has a perfect safety record, not having killed a single pilot. I purchased a laser cut kit from a plane from Aerodome RC, some of the nicest kits I've come across, and set to work immediately assembling the plane over the course of 9 months.
Months?
Months. I had gotten the plane finished and painted when I finally got the nerve to be made in the airplane. A friend was very nice. A friend has a very nice club feel with no obstructions, and he invited me to come made in the plane there. I arrived, did my normal safety checks, and was ready. I took off, and the plane immediately nosed high, and I fought it to keep it level. I managed to keep some airspeed, and after about a minute of flight, the motor shut down. but I still had control. I managed to get the plane back to the runway, plopped her down with no damage. After inspection, it was determined that the ESC had overheated and shut the motor down, and it was and the motor was blazing hot. I just couldn't spend nine. I don't know if I could even fly it after spending 9 months. Okay, so Joshua keeps going here. After a motor and ESC upgrade, I felt confident that the plane was ready for a prime time. I took the plane to a fly-in and had many compliments. Many comments and interest in such an unusual subject. I got the nerve to fly her and took her out to the paved runway at the field. I throttled up and she was immediately away and did some nose-up tendency. With the beefier motor, I had reacted poorly and not gotten the airspeed necessary to properly correct and immediately entered a tip stall. The plane rolled sharply to inverted about 10 feet off the paved runway and creamed into the paved runway with the entire crowd in unison going, ooh. Let me tell you, it was one of the most interesting crashes I have seen.
Interesting.
It was like the plane went into liquid form. No. The entire front end mushed into the pavement, leaving a liquid-like splatter of balsa splinters. No. A number of folks helped me bag up the carnage, including a punctured lipo. After inspection, I decided to make a video. And he has the YouTube links to it here. The assessment was all lighthearted. I don't know how he can take that lighthearted. I would probably go in a quarter and cry. The assessment was all lighthearted, and after a month in the bag, I dragged out the carnage to assess a rebuild. A month later, I had her back together, ready for another remaiden. I struggled to get her off the ground with multiple nose-overs. After suffering more damage from these attempts, I decided to try another power setup. Okay, folks, this is number four if you've currently lost count. And the rebuild and damage incurred. I also realized that my no-so-precise fingertip balance method was way off of the CG. To correct the major problem, I completely stripped the aft end of the fuselage and put on a lighter film covering and used lighter foam for the tail of the plane to reduce ballast in the nose. After all this agony over a two-year period, I finally got it in the air. As you can see from the video, once the plane was properly balanced and the CG, she was a dream to fly. While this subject is still one of my favorites in my fleet, I'm terrified to fly her as I have invested countless hours in detailing and research. A picture of this model was featured on page 81 of the February 2015 issue of Model Aviation.
Nice.
That is awesome. For those that get discouraged in their builds or think that there is no coming back, I can attest to you it can be rebuilt, even if it takes a few attempts. I will be building a 72-inch Sikorsky S-39 at Flight Fest 2015 and hope you can spare some time to stop by the build tent. I love sharing the building experience, and my Adams foam board SE-5A was a hit last year to that effect. Hopefully this story passes along some crash wisdom to other scratch builders out there. Thanks, Joshua.
You bet. It always does. This is great.
That guy is an amazing builder.
Mm-hmm. And that's Josh a beautiful plane.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't do it. I seriously, I couldn't do it. Yeah.
I have shades of that feeling from when just trying to get my first LT-40 off the ground, you know, my first powered plane, gas powered. And all I could see were dollar signs flying through the air. No.
Yeah. All right. I'll kind of let not really the cat out of the bag, but I'll talk about it a little bit. I did finally purchase a Blade 350 QX AP. And really, one of the only reasons I bought is I got a really, really good deal on it. And I think, you know, Wayne and Andre, you can attest to that. If I was paying retail, I wouldn't have bought it. But, you know, I kind of we've been tinkering around, you know, getting a camera plane out just for fun and taking more stuff, you know, to post on our Instagram and stuff. But, you know, in reality, I'd have to buy a GoPro. Mm-hmm. I'd have to build the quad with everything, buy a three-axis gimbal. Probably would have put a good controller like GPS, like the Vector or something on. So initial cost, if it was up to me and I had the time, I would love to build it. And right. I would, that's my first thing I wanted to do. But for the price I got the Blade 350, you know, to pull it out of the box and we can just go,
I couldn't pass it up. So I ended up buying it. We've been tinkering around a little bit with it, Wayne, and you flew it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And but here's my problem. And I don't mind if Wayne flies it or anything. But I've been watching some videos and stuff of the guys flying it. I mean, they're cranking that thing around and putting it out there a good ways. But when it gets to a point where I can barely see it, I just see the dollar signs flashing in my eyes I don't know, man, and I'm sure the more we fly it and get comfortable with it. But even so, even the first time I flew it, I got it up over my roof and I was like, that's it. I don't want to go no higher. Oh, that's funny. Already already posted pictures. Huh?
I see your Instagram there, Andre.
So, I can't imagine, spending 9 months on an airplane. And I probably would literally just shake in my shorts
trying
to fly something like that.
That's where that whole foam board thing is the great equalizer.
Yeah. Even now, you've spent some cash on some pretty good, pricey airplanes. I'm sure you think about that.
I fully admit I fly my FD Racer completely different than how I fly.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Zumboy,
yes.
Right?
Yes. And, exactly.
And I fully admit it. That, and you look, I laughed the other day when I came home, and there was my FD Racer. He had skid across the snow and bounced off the ice and everything. And I went, it's still good to go.
Right.
And even that EDF project that I'm working on, I took the edge of the wings right off that thing the other day, and it's like, okay, let's put that thing back together, and we're going flying again.
Yep.
It's just foam and tape, and I'm like, I love how this hobby has changed for us. I mean, these bot planes that we talk about are beautiful, but to be able to scratch something together, and I should bring the FD Racer to Flight Fest because it'll probably win like the ugliest person. It is just tape and glue and chunks, and the foam is starting to get a little soft, but until that thing explodes, I'm gonna keep flying it, man.
Yeah.
But like this last guy, though, the one thing I get from him, though, is he likes the building part of it. I mean, a lot of these guys, they like to build.
Right.
Where I'm myself, I don't really have the talent to do it. And to tell you the truth right now, I just don't have the time to do it.
Right.
Yeah. So if I were to ever build something like that, man, I'd be a shaking mess to get that thing in the air.
Right. It's kind of funny, too, not jump off topic, but I was weighing on what quadcopter or mm-hmm. AP platform to buy. I wasn't really sure, and I actually was looking at some of the DJI Phantoms, just reading them, looking a little bit, but I got to thinking with their firmware, Wayne, and where we fly, it may not have let me.
Yeah.
So I passed on that one. Plus, they were quite a bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I'm building up my little AP project, and I hope we'll be able to do a little comparison afterwards.
Yeah.
So that's slowly coming on. I spent a couple nights there doing all the wiring and rebuilding all the custom harnesses and everything. So that'll come along soon. But it'll be fun for us to sit there and compare notes when we're both when this thing is up and flying. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, I love the bird's eye view of when I was throwing the Predator.
Yeah,
that bird's eye shot, that was great. I loved it.
Yeah, and that's just something different. You don't mm-hmm. see a lot of kind of weird stuff like that I think we're going to have fun with that thing, where you can just throw it up there a couple hundred feet, park it, literally park that thing and
mm-hmm.
get all kinds of different shots from down below.
Yeah, it's going
to
be fun.
Yeah,
looking forward to that.
And I got a few other things that we're going to do that I talked to you about that I think it will be, some different angles that mm-hmm. we talked about that you guys, I think, are going to like.
Excellent.
So it'll be good. All right, couple more guys, and we'll get you out of here. This one's from Hunter Benbow. Now, we've heard from Hunter mm-hmm. numerous times, and I joke around with him a little bit, and I've emailed him back. But he's 14 years old, and he's from New Zealand. And he said, "Hey, if you guys want to come down, come on down."
Oh yeah.
So he sent in another one. He says, "Hey Chris, it's Hunter from New Zealand again. I live just west of Christchurch in the South Island of New Zealand, and I've flown RC for nearly 5 years. My first plane was a Super Cub LP, the old version, with the crappy FM system. And oh man, I had one of those. And I used to fly there at Butler Park there behind the airport, Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
That thing would cut in and out. And I didn't know at the time. I just thought it was normal. It'd be like, But here I found out it was some kind of interference over there, and, you know, just learning. I didn't know anything. Okay, so he had the old first plane was a Super Cub LP with the old crappy FM system. And get this, I only got rid of the Cub maybe 2 or 3 months ago. Don't mount a big, powerful, brushless motor on an old Super Cub with soft foam. Anyways, that's not the crash story for today. I had a Joy's Way Hobby Dragonfly, exactly the same as a Hobby King Skipper. And after flying that for a while, my uncle decided to make a canopy constructed of polyester and carbon fiber with a little plastic and lots of epoxy to hold his $500 GoPro. Before flying with the GoPro, I did a couple test flights, and the first was a block of foam to act as a GoPro to see how much airflow was disrupted. It went okay, so next I put on the empty GoPro waterproof housing on a canopy with some assorted lead fishing weights inside to simulate the weight of the GoPro. After fiddling with the battery placement and get the correct CG, I was ready to fly. Test went okay. Getting used to the different characteristics of the extra weight, stressing the airframe out, took a little while. Then, the next day, the GoPro went in, and off I went. I flew about 5 videoed flights with the GoPro on, and that lasted, of course. I decided, let's get a back view of the flight. So, using a couple rubber bands, I mounted my month-old Samsung Galaxy Young cell phone to the back of the GoPro. Oh, my gosh. I wouldn't even think. There is no way. You know, okay, off subject a little bit, and we'll continue on. But when we got Brian, my neighbor, flying, and, you know, he listen to this, Andre. He just started flying literally like a few days before, bought the Delta Rays, out having a good time. And the next thing I know is out flying with him, and he's like, hey, I'm videoing. I'm like, oh, what'd you do? Get a GoPro? It was all, no, I strapped my iPhone onto it. He's just learning and already strapped his iPhone onto the Delta Ray and was out cranking around. Great. I'm like, there is no way, buddy. No way. All right, back on subject here. I was coming in on final to land. I had lots of altitude, so I decided to shut the motor off and glide in. Bad. Don't do that. All of a sudden, the Dragonfly decides it's going to stall and spiral into the ground. The video clearly shows, when in slow motion, how when the plane smashed into the ground, the canopy pulls away from the plane as it flips. The damage was pretty bad, but luckily, the only thing that got completely obliterated was the custom GoPro mounting canopy. The GoPro, my phone, and the Dragonfly all were fine. Wow. He got lucky.
Yeah.
Lucky. The Dragonfly died a while after the GoPro crash when one day I was out flying and found that the rudder servo was loose in the foam. Yep. So it stopped the rudder from doing anything stupid in flight, I unplugged the rudder servo. Oh, I see. So he knew it was loose and so it wouldn't cause any problems. He unplugged it. That's when everything turned to shredded foam when the rudder hinge popped out and basically stuck the rudder sideways. That is funny. I've never heard of that. I had nearly no control of the plane as it spiraled into some nice dirt. So think about that. You're like, okay, no big deal. I'll just unplug it. We won't have any problems. There were a few more crashes I had with this plane before the final one, in which the attached document is called The Life of the Dragonfly. Also, if you guys wanted to come down here to NZ over the winter, which is our summer, sure, you'll be welcome. Might be intense on the lawn by my house. Isn't too big, but that'd be fun. Love the podcast. Keep cranking around, Hunter. Oh, and he's got some pictures here.
Yeah, I'd be all about that
he
trip.
Shredded that thing up. Yeah.
That's good. Hunter always sends in some crazy funny stories. All right. And I got one more here for you, Andre. So listen up to this one because this might help you out a little bit. This one's from Nicholas. It's a crash story and some ultra micro P40 tips for you, buddy. I just finished listening to a podcast where Andre was mentioning about not having successful flights with the ultra micro P40. I've had it for about 2 years or so now. My experience out of the box was horrible. Short story, it's super tail heavy, and one aileron was not trimmed to neutral correctly. I moved the battery forward to be under the nose, says C modifications.
Once I got the CG right, it flew much better. It flies – it's powered very scale-like, meaning it's not a powerhouse. After about 2 or 3 minutes on a fresh 150, loops from level flight are non-existent. Dives are required for speed. If it doesn't have enough power to pull through the loop, the AS3X will kick in and cause a plane to roll, flip out at the stall at the top of the loop. All the transmitter inputs seem to do nothing other than that. She's a great flyer. I haven't tried the newer 45C packs that the AS3X Extra uses on. I haven't used them on the P40, but I imagine that it would pull more power to the plane. Them are pretty good batteries, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Now, for the crash story. This was 2008 or 2009. I was a year out of college working at my first job and gone back to the AMA club I grew up flying to help my dad with his planes at the annual Warbirds Over Dixie event. One of the nearby municipalities had just finished building and filling a new drinking water reservoir. Absolutely no aquatic activity was allowed on the lake at the time. This story is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I was spotting for the club treasurer at the time while he was flying his Hangar 9 T6 Appropriation of Fund. That's a cool name. Misappropriation of Funds. When he lost it into the lake.
Of course.
The plane had to be 100 yards out on the lake from shore with the wind blowing it down the lake. Despite three of us warning him not to do it, the pilot strips down and starts swimming out. He reaches about 50 yards and realizes that's too far and starts to come back, at which point he makes it about 25 yards back and starts calling for help. I strip down, rush out to help him. I'm not a strong swimmer, by the way. So I was fortunate enough I could touch the bottom and I could drag him back. The pilot calls all the numbers for the lake warden. No answer, or the numbers didn't ring. At this time, the club had no flotation devices. I found a 10-foot-long piece of driftwood that supported my weight. I held on to the driftwood and paddled out to the plane. I grabbed the plane, paddled back against the wind. I got back to shore, and the only thing we lost on the plane was a quarter panel of the wing. It was still floating down the lake in the wind, and I was way too tired to chase after it. The nitro motor was attached only by the braided steel wire he used for the throttle control. The pilot was so thrilled I saved his life. And his wife's airplane, that he offered me a reward of anything. Just being out of college with no space in my apartment for my airplanes, a 60-size nitro-powered Extra 300 and a 40-size nitro-powered Funfly all on 72 megahertz, I jokingly asked for a DX6i in the original Micro Sukhoi, the white one. He pulled out his phone and ordered both right there on the shore beside the lake.
Wow.
There's a picture of me choking him on the stupidity of trying to swim, holding his recovered airplane with a statement, "Don't swim to crashed planes." The club now keeps flotation devices at the field for this reason. So the moral of the story, if you fly over water, don't swim out. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Again, that's something I would never think or a story like oh, that's crazy.
Oh, no. And the thing is, you know that if there's water, it's calling for that plane.
Yeah, I know.
It's like a tree. You can have one tree out there, and you'll find it.
Yep. Oh, that's a crazy story. All right. Well, we finally got through most of all the crash stories.
All right.
Man, that was a lot. But there were some good stories in there.
All right, guys. That means you can send us some more.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Keep sending them in. We'll get a compile of them again and go through them. And next time, too, if we get some really good ones and we have some time, I love to call and talk to you guys, like to hear them personally and get their description of them and everything.
Yep.
That's great. So, well, other than that, geez, we actually over an hour already, too. I can't believe it. I think we're going to get out of here. We'll be back again here in a couple weeks. And like I say, the Toledo show, we got some reviews coming up. We got some exciting stuff, and I think it's going to be good. So we're going to get out of here. Andre, thank you once again for joining in.
Hey, no problem. I guess we'll say happy – well, I guess it's Easter this week.
Yes.
This podcast goes out. So, yeah, happy Easter, everybody. And I got to say, because I'm going to get bugged, happy birthday to my little boy, James. He turns nine on Sunday.
Yeah, happy birthday, James.
Yeah.
So he said he might come out with me to the field tomorrow, because we're all off. So I might try and put something into his hands, figure out what I have.
All right, that'd be great. Make sure you get some pictures of that.
Yeah. Of course. Well, no, I'll probably be holding onto the remote, so maybe I'll.
Yeah.
But either way, it was some good father-son time flying. So.
Very good.
Good. Awesome. All right, before we go, real quick, keep sending in the crash stories at chris@flighttest.com. Give us a follow on Instagram at FT After Hours and also on Twitter at FT After Hours. And we'd love to hear from you, and we'll talk to you here in a couple weeks. We're out of here.
See you guys.
See you. Good night, everybody. Bye.